And with that, let's jump into what our main topic is today. It's City Talk again. We have Mayor Shelby Ronstadt here and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. So let's start out with a review of 2022. And I think, Shelby, you're the one that usually tells us what happened in the city last year that is of significance and you'd like people to know about.
Yeah, this was a huge year for the city of Sandpoint. First off, I would say it was last November, not just a couple of months ago, but that we passed the 8%, or I'm sorry, we passed the increase in the hotel motel tax. And that was really something because we've had for a long time, we've had a local option tax, a hotel motel tax of 7%. And it turns out that that was relatively low compared to other resort communities throughout the state. So we put it to the voters to increase that tax to 14%, and they approved it. 62% of voters in Sandpoint approved that. So that's fantastic. All that money is dedicated to funding street and sidewalk improvements throughout town. So the first projects, I should mention, too, that it was a couple years ago that we completed a master plan for a multimodal plan. And part of that was doing a study to analyze what would be the most strategic use of our limited tax dollars for street and sidewalk improvements. And so this list that we have of prioritized projects is there's a lot of science and consideration that goes into this list. And the first projects on the list are design. We're entering the design phase for projects on Cedar and west of Division and on Fir east of Division. So we'll finalize design and construction for sidewalks on Larch from Safety to the new Kinexu Health Center and sidewalk connectivity improvements, including a replacement near Washington Elementary. So those are a few of the first projects on the list, and those will be funded in significant part by the hotel motel tax. So we expect to raise, I think it's about, it's about $1 million a year for combined for the new hotel motel tax. So it's really a significant improvement in terms of what we've had for, investments in street and sidewalks. Typically we've done about $250,000 budgeted investments. So we're really stepping up investments into streets. Also, we kicked off revamped the comprehensive plan update. It actually started before COVID-19, but the pandemic kind of, put the project on hold. So we just started that back up again here this fall, and that's moving along nicely. We expect to have an approved comprehensive plan update, I anticipate, by fall. We also completed a rate study for water and wastewater utilities. So that's been a big deal. That's been on our list of things to do for a long time. And, of course, like I mentioned, COVID really kind of, put us behind schedule on a lot of things, and this was one of them. But this is really critical for us to make sure that we have appropriately funded our wastewater and water infrastructure. And we've got, we'll talk a little bit about plans for a wastewater treatment plant that have also been envisioned for a long time and now are coming to fruition. And this rate study was a critical part to have completed before we go into looking at building a new treatment facility, because we have to make sure that we have, proper funding in place. So we also completed another first for us was the first ever urban forestry master plan. That was a big deal. We also initiated a first ever watershed recreation plan. We expect that to be completed in June. And I should mention, in terms of watershed recreation, this is something that's personally kind of exciting for me as a user of our trail systems up there. A new flow trail was just completed a couple of months ago. And it's a great trail. I'm not sure how it is in the snow and ice right now, but I'm sure it's still great for hiking. But just a fantastic design and built trail up there by Pondere Peddlers. And that's just the first of many to come. I know we just approved a plan to add another section of trail and continue to do some cleanup of old old trails up there. So all of that's happening this year on the schedule as well.
Mayor Shelby,
yes.
Just to be clear, so those trails are up the Schweitzer Road somewhere, and that is part of the city?
Yes, correct. So the Little Sand Creek watershed is about 4,000 acres of city-owned property. As you're driving up Schweitzer Road there, much of that property that you're passing through there is owned by the city of Sandpoint. There's also some BLM and Forest Service land up there as well. And of course, when you get towards the top, Schweitzer Mountain Properties owns significant portions of that land as well. So the trail system that I'm speaking of basically goes from the second switchback up to the roundabout. So there's a whole trail network in there that has been built, managed, and maintained by Pondere Peddlers through partnership with the city of Sandpoint. But I should mention, too, that, you know, and above that, I should say, Schweitzer and Schweitzer Recreation District manage and operate and build the trails, you know, up above that. Mm. So
where's the trailhead for the new flow trail?
There's a trail. The lower trailhead is just past the second switchback as you're driving up the road, and it's on the left-hand side. You'll see there's a large pullout and a sign, mm-hmm. And then you have to cross the road to start going up the trail. Mm-hmm. And then it terminates up at the roundabout on the right side as mm-hmm. you're going uphill. Okay. We also hired our first Arts and Historic Preservation Officer. We're really happy to have done that after completing an Arts and Culture Historic Master Plan, I guess it was a year and a half ago.
And who has that position?
Heather Upton.
Oh, Heather Upton.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the Bonner County Historic Preservation Officer as well. Or I'm sorry, Bonner
County. She was head of the museum.
With the museum.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
that's
and
then
there's been some changes at the museum recently, and Hannah Combs.
Combs is now the executive director.
Promoted to executive director of the museum.
I was happy to see that because she's been at the museum for many years.
Yeah. And she's part of our Arts, Culture, and Historic Preservation Commission. Mm-hmm. I think another thing to note on the Arts and Culture Historic Preservation, we received a grant in the last year from the NEA. From the National Endowment for the Arts to fund arts organizations impacted through COVID. So grant awards went out late last year. Panada, we were talking about them earlier, was one of our recipients amongst several other arts and culture organizations. So,
mm-hmm. When did you hear on that?
Those were awarded.
Oh, they were awarded.
Yeah, those were already awarded end of last year.
Do you think there'll be more opportunities like that for arts and education organizations to apply for more grants?
Potentially, we're continuing to look at what's out there. And I think the difference, again, is having that assigned staff person really leading these efforts and moving us along, I think, really positions us.
And actually, I had confused that. I knew that the award was made, but I believe the Panda, with the city's help, has applied for an Idaho Gym grant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. So
and,
that's
and that
still
was one.
Pending.
I was one. Do you know when that is decided?
That should be in the next 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
I think we'll probably hear on that.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's for the roof replacement.
Yeah.
Another thing I'll mention, and this is a really big deal, and I'm going to, kick it off to Jennifer here. This is really her baby, and she needs to celebrate this because the city raised $7.5 million for construction of the James E. Russell Sports Center. And that is in Traverse Park. It's going to include 4 indoor tennis courts that can also be used as pickle courts. It could accommodate 16 pickleball courts in there. So this was a donation that Jennifer has created this whole thing. So James E. Russell, the James E. Russell family is from Sandpoint here, and they wanted to make a donation to the city. I'm going to pass it off to Jennifer and let her tell the story. But this is an amazing story. It's the largest, as far as we know, it's the largest municipal donation that that has ever occurred in certainly in Idaho and maybe in the U.S. But Jennifer, go ahead, tell us the story.
Yeah, so this was significant cash donation, and this was a family wanting to make a memorial gift to the community that would honor their father for Jim Russell, the son, and for Jenny Russell, James Russell's widow, wanting to make a gift to the community in memory of her husband. They are longtime residents. Both Jenny and Jim attended Sandpoint High School. He was a multi-sport athlete, attended University of Idaho, is in the Hall of Fame for engineering at University of Idaho, and was an avid player of racket sports his entire life. So they view racket sports as lifelong sports, and in our Parks and Rec Master Plan, our concept for Traverse Park had included in the note for the in the concept plan, you know, potential site for a future indoor court facility. And it was more of a note, not as much in the rendering itself, but certainly recognized in the concept, knowing that would probably be way down the road, raising the funding for that. And so we went over the concept plans, trying to align interests, and they came back and said that building is what we're really interested in, and ultimately made a $7.5 million cash donation to the city for construction of that building. We're a bit behind schedule. We awarded a contract last year to a design build group, and we're continuing to move forward with design, and people haven't seen anything because we don't have the final design concept fully completed. And the purpose of design build is making sure it fits within the budget and you can afford it, so you don't see a design that then ultimately isn't what we can construct. And unfortunately, we're having to make a change on our team working on this project with the general contractor, but the rest of the design team and the subs will stay on. So that's caused us some delays beyond what we had originally expected. But we expect to be moving forward and having final design out for the public and council to see here in the next few months. And ultimately, I think we've got a plan forward to keep us fairly close to on schedule to have completion of the building spring of next year. And we're pushing hard on that timeline because high school tennis competition is here next spring. So we're trying to get done for accommodating that high school competition.
Okay. You have a deadline for a reason, which is great. One of the things I think about is all the pickleball players are going to love it, too, because this town is crazy. All the whole world is with pickleball, by the way. Probably both of you are, even. But also the cost of the initial build, but then there's probably more costs. So have you had to do more fundraising for this project? And then maintenance, does that fit into your general fund for maintenance once it's built?
Yeah, what we did with launching design of this project was at the same time brought back a consulting group that we had worked with for the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. It was Greenplay at the time, now it's merged into a group, Barry Dunn. And they have worked closely with us on developing the operational plan for the center. And so there's been some surveys that have come out, and that's still in the works of getting finalized. And certainly there will be an opportunity for feedback on that as well. But really that broader planning, and we've also been working with fundraising groups, including the tennis group, on hopefully setting up an endowment fund that really supports operations and maintenance moving forward for memorial contributions and things like that. It's a very effective way for people to make contributions in perpetuity that will fund maintenance and operations and support ongoing improvements as well as maintenance and keep the costs down for people wanting to use the facility.
And let me add, Susie, there's a couple other amenities that are going to be included that are really pretty amazing. So this includes an expansion of the skate park as well as lighting for the skate park. It's probably, you know, square foot per square foot, the most used park in the city. So it's a great investment.
Per square foot, yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the way to put it.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. Whenever I go by there, it's always packed all day long. So even in, you know, weather like this. So and then another thing that's part of that, there's going to be a splash park in front that I'm really excited to share this design with the public. It looks really cool. It really kind of speaks to the community and where we are with the watershed and the lake. It's going to be exciting. And I think having a water feature on that side of the town is just going to be immensely popular. And what an entry gateway into this new James E. Russell facility. And there's also going to be funding, grant funding to support all that. I know the skate park has been, Sandpoint Skate Park Association has been really actively fundraising. Yeah. And we'll be, you know, supporting them to leverage what additional grant funding that we can help bring to the table. And the same is true for the splash park. What grant were we?
Wait, so Maeve will be making Maeve, our parks planning and development manager, will be making a presentation to council on that tonight. We are seeking approval to apply for a land water conservation fund grant that would fund half the cost for renovations for the parking lot, as well as the playground and site for a splash pad as well, directly adjacent to the center. So what we've heard from the community really about use of that sports complex and Traverse Park in particular, whether you're in organized sports or then, and we look at just our general community members who maybe aren't, what people value about that park most is the picnic area, the playground, and the walking trails. So improvements to all three of those things are incorporated in this project. And I really encourage people to look at concept for the playground. I think it's really neat. It reflects our environment here from the lake flowing down through the river. And it is a very playful interpretation of the Patrick McManus books. And so using structures, materials, and reflecting cabin life and what you would find here along the shorelines of the water in our community. One of the facts many people may not know is Jim Russell and the Russell family, the Patrick McManus books are based on that family. And so main character in the book actually is based on Jim Russell. So the designers really have taken that to extend beyond the building to, again, create a playground that will be an all-access, really us making our first big move around accessibility to our playgrounds for all users. So it will be reusing part components of the existing playground, but then there will be improvements as well, and it will be, again, all access. So it's exciting.
Yeah, very big expansion of our recreational opportunities here, especially indoor, of course. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. And it's going to include a community room where, things like meetings, birthday parties, and other celebrations can be hosted. So that's exciting.
You have to ask from personal interest, are basketball courts going to be in there?
So we designed this, the building design, they aren't necessarily in this building itself. However, the design is done so it envisions a future phase, which could be a second building connected to it that would be multi-purpose specifically for basketball, volleyball, those types of court sports, different from racket sports. Really, we're trying to look at the design of this facility from the mind that really bridging to more of a full recreation center, because the communities wanted that, talked about it for decades. And, you know, again, looking at this as a first phase, and maybe there's someone else out there, another family, funder, grantor, who is interested in that next piece. But we certainly heard from the basketball community, so...
Well, Shelby, you should have been in that, being a basketball player.
Well, I'm flattered that you called me a basketball player.
Hey, I think you scored on me last time. Yeah.
I think one of the keys to this facility is, as we're looking at it, we are looking at those opportunities for floor protection that as we move and look at where there are schedule opportunities beyond racket sports, this could be a center used for larger community gatherings as well, because we heard loud and clear through the Parks and Rec master planning process, the public really prioritizes some indoor space, because we really lack that this time of year when we don't have a lot of sun out and the weather's kind of inclement. So
yeah, and if you're not a skier, which is an outdoor sport. Well, I just want to remind our listeners, thanks for listening to the morning show here on this Wednesday. And we're here with Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. No, I said that wrong.
Yeah.
I said that right. Okay. And we're talking about City Talk, a lot of things. I want to congratulate our city for all the work we've done on the recreation. We have great parks. We have a lake. Oh, my goodness. And we have really good ideas coming up and ways of making it feasible all the way around. So good job there. There's also other aspects of the city that are up front and center, and that is housing and density issues. I know that Mayor Ronstadt, you had an article in the Reader last week about stuff like that. So is that the next subject we want to talk about?
Yeah, we can move on to that for sure. So recently, it was over the last 6 months or so, we contracted Leland Consulting, and they were helping us conduct a housing and economic development analysis. So what we were really trying to understand from the city perspective is we have increasingly limited land resources, and how can we use our limited resources most efficiently to accomplish housing, and not just housing, but housing that actually meets the needs of our workforce and our community, right? So we know we can continue to build expensive houses for second homeowners, right? We're good at that. But how are we, as the cost of housing continues to rise, and particularly under this challenging economy that we have currently, high labor prices, high materials prices, et cetera. How can we ensure that we can continue to house our workforce over the long term? And of course, this comes back to economic vitality, right? Because if employers can't attract and retain new workers or existing workers because workers can't afford to live where they work, it creates a problem for the entire economy and for everybody, regardless of where you're at on the income spectrum or whether or not you have a home, because the people that you rely on for services maybe can't afford to live here anymore. So it's all connected, and we wanted to make sure that we were both empowering ourselves with the knowledge and insight, but also providing that insight to the development community out there, to the employers who are, hiring. And so that's why we did this study with Leland. And we got the results back a couple of months ago, and we discussed it over a couple of meetings at City Council. And so I've been reporting on that. I just completed, in fact, it came today, I think, came out the last of a six-series part that I published in the paper discussing all of this. So there are a lot of really important takeaways in there, and we can get into it, any aspect of it. But the gist of it is, I think this was a really important tool for us to be able to understand the housing market and what we can do as a city to improve housing affordability and do what we can. You know, a lot of what the city can do is around planning. So the comprehensive land use plan that is currently underway is a really important foundational document for us to be able to create the right kind of policy framework that will encourage and support housing affordability. And then what's to follow from that comp plan is an update of the entire zoning code. So that's a really important piece that the city has in all that. And there's a lot that the city can do to encourage the kind of built environment that we want to see. I think it was, the timing was just right for the Leland study to come in and give us data and insights that will enable us to be able to apply that in the comp plan and in the future zoning changes that are certain to come. Also part of that, one of the key recommendations, and actually this is just coming out in the paper today in my article, is discussion of a housing authority. That was actually the first action item listed in the Leland report. It was a recommendation for the city to create a multi-jurisdictional housing authority. And of course, recognizing that this is a regional problem, it's not just a Sandpoint problem. And for that matter, it's not just a Barnard County problem. This is happening across the nation. But it's particularly potent in communities like Sandpoint that are high amenity, a very desirable places to live, right? And there's not a lot of land, right? So we have, there's not a lot of options or a lot of choices in terms of places to live, because we have more demand than we have supply. So that's the fundamental nature of the problem. So with the recommendation to create a housing authority, it gives us as a community some extra tools, really powerful tools in our toolbox that we can use to not just access additional funding, but to give us leverage that we can use then to leverage the resources that we already do have to create more affordable housing choices.
So I have a real quick question on that ability to influence. Say a developer said, well, we're going to put in low-income housing, or affordable housing, we'll call it. And how much does the city have? Maybe the comprehensive plan will address this. To say, we'll give you a permit as long as it truly is affordable housing. Does that come into the comprehensive plan, and then would that be managed by this possible new housing authority if it comes about?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the comprehensive land use plan sets the vision, right? So it says the goals and objectives of the community. So it comes through a robust community engagement process where we're going out there into the community through workshops, plenty of surveying and other opportunities. Currently, actually, incidentally, there's a survey on our website that addresses some of these issues.
It's specifically density, right?
Yeah. And accessory dwelling units is a key component of that. We can talk about any of that too. But that comp plan,
every one of these things is a whole show in itself.
I think that you should be here every other week. Yeah. So how about that?
I'm sorry to cut you off.
No worries. Yeah, so the comp plan really sets the vision. And so what our process is through the comp plan is to really reach out into the community and try to distill what are the goals and objectives, what are the values of the community, and then that sort of sets the tone for the regulatory framework for land use policy. So in answer to your question, what can come out of the comp plan is a desire to see those kinds of options in our community, right? We need to prioritize that. And then when it gets to the policy part, where we're talking about zoning codes and regulations, there's processes that we can put into place that will give us a process whereby we can validate whether or not those projects meet certain criteria. And that's where a housing authority can be really helpful to sort of take some of that. You know, there's a lot of professional experience and knowledge that's maybe a little bit outside of the scope of our Planning and Zoning Commission, right? So that's where a housing authority can be helpful to really kind of hone in on how to set the policy to promote those kinds of developments, but also how to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. That's the really key piece here, because a developer can come in and put up an application for, let's say, a development, and it can go through the planning and zoning process, and they can say, oh yeah, these are going to be affordable, but at the end of the day, they can the Planning and Zoning Commission and our building department, they're going to ensure that what is designed is built, but how that's managed, how it's operated, how it's occupied, that is that isn't really governed by our building department or Planning and Zoning department. So there's opportunities there where we can tighten that up, and we can hold those developers more accountable.
Right. And if a developer knows ahead of time that this city, this area, this community has a vision that's strong, they will know ahead of time so they can base their development plans on that vision and that regulations, whatever you put in place.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. Yeah, and it actually, saves developers time and money, right? If they know where the city's growing, how it's growing, what the city wants to achieve, then it adds a lot more clarity and takes away all the guesswork. And the guesswork is where, it makes investors, makes developers uneasy, right, is not knowing. So we're trying to make it really clear what the city's goals are and what we're trying to achieve. And I think that's going to be good for everybody. And the result is we're going to end up I think, with a plan for addressing workforce housing in this community that is going to, I think, can set an example throughout the state. Actually, I'm excited to share some ideas around the Housing Authority as that evolves.
Mm-hmm. And the comprehensive plan is going to be important, obviously, keystone in this. And you mentioned that the city's working on it. You're hoping to have a comprehensive plan update done by fall, if I heard that correctly. Are there going to be public participation built into that process of rewriting that? I know you've already had some surveying that you did for that.
I would encourage people to really pay attention to what is on our agenda for our planning and zoning commission meetings, because there may be additional survey opportunities, but there's a lot of discussion happening at planning and zoning. Their last meeting was just last night again, and they were talking about the comp plan and chapters and feedback that they had received to date. So watching those agendas, I think, is really important to really staying engaged in that process, because there have been a number of public surveys really over the last couple of years. There had been some initial community kickoff workshops as well. And then always as these things move forward, a lot of this work ends up happening at planning and zoning ultimately before it comes to council. So those are really good opportunities, and you'll most likely see elements of the comp plan on the planning and zoning agendas every meeting moving forward to adoption.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll probably run out of time before we realize it. I wanted to ask about something that's going to be on the agenda tonight, which is the waterfront design competition. And why don't you describe what that's about and how that process is going to work? And I don't know, Shelby or Jennifer, which one is
we can both discuss that. So the, you know, downtown waterfront, this has been an initiative that really, you know, started at the beginning of my term in 2017. We came up with an initial concept and discussed it with stakeholders there along First Avenue, property owners. And then we came up with another concept through our Parks and Rec Master Plan a couple of years ago. And this is really, you know, I just kind of want to highlight. So the waterfront downtown, I think, is kind of maybe one of the biggest, you might say, missed opportunities for the city of Sandpoint. And you know, we've been talking about it for the last number of years. And I just think it's so critically important for us to really get this right. We are so blessed to have Sand Creek flowing through downtown, to have assets like City Beach, Dock Street, and the Dock Street that we have out there, Sand Creek parking lot,
the marina,
the marina. Thank you, okay. Sand Creek Trail. I mean, we've got just these incredible assets, and right in our downtown. So we wanted to make sure that we've really put a lot of thought and care into coming up with a plan and a vision for how we can really maximize this, not just for recreation and you know, leisure, but for economic development and opportunity. So Jennifer, do you want to talk a little bit about how the design competition came to be and kind of our process?
Sure. I think that the mayor set a good stage for that. We originally were talking about how we move forward our waterfront concepts for City Beach, for the downtown waterfront, and particularly the Farman's Landing area, knowing that there's developments in the works. There have been properties that have exchanged hands, so we expect development to be occurring. And so initially our conversations really focused on the waterfront themselves, but as we got moving through really what the goal was, and it's about economic vitality in downtown, economic development in downtown, turning our downtown around to face the waterfront has been talked about for a long time, and really that interface of what's happening in the downtown and the waterfront is where really this kind of evolved into downtown and waterfront competition. And I think the best way to think about it is it is moving forward those waterfront concepts so that we can get a final concept for construction and ultimately phased construction as we build out. But it's really also about remaster planning for the downtown. The last time we went through this effort, and there's a lot of discussion about this in the competition manual, which is up in our council packet in the website. People can access that there, and we'll probably get it up on our front page today as well. So it's easier to find. And as we move forward, hopefully with approval from council to publish. But the last time we went through this master planning effort for the downtown was really late 1990s, early 2000. Many might remember the work that Tom Hudson had done.
The Hudson Group, yeah.
And the Hudson Report. And that really kicked off a 20-year effort of revitalization in our downtown. We formed an urban renewal area in the downtown to fund improvements. There have been a number of capital projects. The byway went in since that time. There was the comp plan, incidentally, during that time. Commercial A zone created for the downtown and really defining some design standards within that commercial A, as well as some new height allowances and restrictions in the downtown core. So we're 20 years later and really at a good time to revisit, kind of stop, reassess, and revisit for the next 20 years. And I think it's important to note that, too, when you go back and look historically through those efforts over the last 20 years, we have continually heard the concerns about preserving the historic character, the historic look and feel of downtown, and really getting down to defining what is that. I mean, what is it, the brick buildings downtown? Is it the cultural, the arts, the vibrancy and the events downtown? What really is that? And I think going through a process like this where there are real visuals that are going to be involved in community presentations, that will be an opportunity to really flesh out what that really means to the community. And there's been much discussion, including recently in our Arts, Culture, Historic Preservation Master Plan, about the creation of a historic district, a historic overlay. So this process will also include really looking at that and should there be different districts and some recommendations about what those might be and an opportunity for the community to have feedback and input on that. So it really, I think thinking about it, it's a master plan for downtown, but it's also moving forward those concepts for the waterfront that the city currently has.
Mm-hmm. And so to, you know, describe a little bit about what the competition is. So normally how the city would approach something like this is we would put out an RFP for a design firm to come and do a design for us, right?
Do a consultation and the yep. process and yep. then come
that's
up with
right.
a specific design idea or some set of them, yeah.
That's right. So the difference with this design competition, which I don't think the city's ever done anything like mm-hmm. this before, is to come up with a plan, which is what's up before council for approval this evening. It's a design manual. And what that is it's a plan for how, you know, what we're trying to achieve with this design. And then that plan will go out to design teams far and wide, right? So it casts a much bigger net than I think we'd be able to cast otherwise. And what it does is it pits these different design firms against one another to compete to win the award, if you will. And they get paid a certain amount. There's they get paid $40,000 for submitting a what we call a phase two application. And so there will be three, maybe four firms that will make it to that level, and then they'll compete for the phase three, for the winning the winning design. But the cool thing from our perspective as a community is we get to take these design concepts from leading firms around the country and compare and contrast them a little bit, and so we might see something with this design over here that we really like, but we really like what this firm did over here, this concept. And so we can kind of, you know, then when we go back for, you know, when we go back and pick the winner, if you will, we can say, you know, hey, we really, we think you're the best, right? But we really like this element that this firm did over here, and we like these features this firm did over here. And can you incorporate these into the design? So we end up getting a much more, I think, robust, thoughtful design that it gives us sort of another layer and level of both creativity, but also, you know, consideration that we can then apply into the final product. And all this happens, you know, prior to what is our normal public process, which once we develop, once we choose a firm, then we're kind of off, you know, at that point, we're sort of where our normal process begins, right? Mm-hmm. Our normal public process. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So this is a really interesting concept, the design competition idea. And as you described, there are three stages.
Yeah.
So the first stage, you do a call for...
Call for proposals.
Yep. Any idea how many of those you might get in that first stage? Because that's an unpaid thing. And I imagine there's a lot of hours that go into just putting together a proposal.
Our consultant says 10 to 12 is what he would expect. And with that first phase, it's not too bad because we're mostly saying, you know, hey, look, you know, send us some examples of things like this that you've done and your design team. And so this is stuff that they should already have kind of in their files, and it shouldn't take too much effort to sort of put that together. The phase two is the part that's going to take some more time because they're actually kind of coming up with a vision, a concept, and there's some work that goes into that for sure. Did you want to add to that?
And they get an honorarium. The guys that get selected for the phase two get a $40,000 honorarium. So there could be three, or you said four.
Yeah, most likely there will be three selected for the phase two. And I think overall, one of the things we vetted on this early on is we were looking for what was the best path to move forward, hire an individual consultant or move forward with this design competition approach. Our costs essentially end up being about the same, either approach. Mm-hmm. Through a design competition like this, it becomes a training opportunity for individuals within firms. There's a lot of notoriety around this too. You tend to get more work than certainly what you're paying for with $40,000, but you're offsetting some of those costs for these firms. And when we're talking about teams submitting, I think that's another key difference than historically what we've done with master planning efforts where, let's take the Tom Hudson approach. We had a single consultant and with greatly skilled with a wonderful background and obviously gave us a great jumping off point relative to master planning and follow-up activities for the downtown. The difference in this process is design teams will be expected to be comprised of master planners as well as engineers, experienced in stormwater, experienced in civil, architects, landscape architects, really a robust team of professionals looking at all of the elements around downtown, historic preservation, development, planning, comp plan, zoning, construction of our waterfront. So there's going to be all of these elements and really bringing all of these looks together instead of phasing that over a period over years. Really at the front end, having a vision that is achievable. Mm-hmm. And that's where a jury comes in with a design competition too, which also is different than historically what we do. We typically have a consultant come in, give us concepts, we get community feedback. With that, we have a staff review and a recommendation to council ultimately out of this. A design competition adds another element that we typically don't have in that process where there is a jury. And it is a jury made up of professionals. And the role of the jury is not to replace the technical expertise on staff, and it's not to replace the community perspective either in that what resonates with the community. The jury's role is it's made up of eight technical experts, four of whom are local, represent our local community and have the technical expertise, and then four of whom come from outside of the area, but they bring not only their technical expertise, but they bring their experience being involved in design competitions and similar efforts in other communities. So there's an art to these design competitions. And so having that experience is helpful. And their role is to really vet the work of the design team so we don't get some vision that isn't achievable, it's not buildable, it's not practical. One easy parallel to kind of make is when we were doing the waterfront concepts, and you'll recall that there was much discussion about the realignment of the boat launch and whether that was a feasible location. Is it deep enough? With that narrow channel going into Sand Creek, would it allow boats to pass through as well as launching in that area as well? That's an easy parallel to understand what the role of the jury is, because these would be experts that are really vetting the viability of what is presented.
Mm-hmm. So let me squeeze in one more question here. We are going to run out of time. As you mentioned, there are four locals, and folks can go and get the design competition manual off the website. You said it's 40 pages. It gives a little bio on each of the jury members. But how did you select the jury members?
A lot of that was through relying on our design competition, our competition manager and expert, Don Stastny. For those who haven't looked at the background of Mr. Stastny, he is the world-renowned premier design competition manager. And in terms of bringing in teams to compete for this, Don's involvement with this, his reputation and his name brings in teams that otherwise we would not bring in. We're so fortunate that we were able to get on his radar and really be one of his kind of sunset projects overall in his career. He's retired for the most part, but he has done this all over the place and worldwide, at the federal level, local government level, nonprofit level, community level, a little bit of everything.
International.
So, he's done most of the U.S. Most of the U.S. Embassies throughout the world, mm-hmm. interestingly. So he brings that expertise and had recommendations as to what the makeup of the jury would be. And again, he's looking for technical expertise, but rooted at Don's core also is that we also have appropriate representation of different cultures, of different ethnic makeups on the jury, so you'll see that reflected in there as well. And finally, his thinking is with the outside experts was to give the city some experts that could not only help with the competition, but moving forward could help us with connections to funding sources and a vetting resource that could help us moving forward in the future. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, well, this is a big one to dig in on as well, but this is going to be weighed tonight by the city council. What's the city council action tonight on this?
The council action tonight is to approve the posting of the competition manual and opening the competition. So it's kind of thinking of approving us to go to bid, if you will, would be the comparison. This is about our fourth presentation to City Council on this. So this is an effort culminating that started late last summer and final competition manual going before Council tonight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One of the things, that just listening to both of you, Mayor Ronstadt and Jennifer Stapleton, City Administrator, talk is how much our city here in Sandpoint, Idaho, asks for the citizens to be engaged in process, in ideas, in concepts. So you've mentioned some of the ways, but what are the ways that they can connect to the city? And we just have a few minutes.
Well, key one now is we have an opening on our Planning and Zoning Commission, so the mayor's looking for someone to appoint to an opening.
That's right. We welcome anyone to apply. It's a bonus if you have experience in development. I think that's a plus. Because those people probably have a pretty good, foundational understanding of planning and zoning and how it works. But we have a number of committees and commissions that that are opportunities for public involvement, and we often have seats available. So I would just encourage anyone who's interested in volunteering with the city to go to our website, and at the top there's a link that says Get Involved. You can click on that and look at there's a link for commissions and committees and commissions. You can click on that and see all of the different opportunities to get involved. So there's Arts and Historic Preservation Committee. There's Planning and Zoning, of course. We've got Tree Committee. So there's a variety of different opportunities. Please, if you're interested and have some time, we'd love your involvement. And if nothing else, just please come to our Planning and Zoning Commission meetings or our City Council meetings. They're always open to the public. And if you don't know, now you know. They're also available online. You can watch and participate from the comfort of your living room. So
that's fantastic. And what is that website, by the way?
You can get to it right on our website. There's a link right on the front about meetings. Mm-hmm. And if you are interested in looking at past meetings, the city has a YouTube channel.
Oh, wow.
City of Sandpoint YouTube channel. So you can on that, you can view any of our most recent.
You could binge. Probably.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's amazing how many bingers we have out there on the YouTube channel.
And the city website is
www.sandpointidaho.gov.
There you go. You have to do the .gov or you'll get something else over there.
Yes, not us.
Well, we want to thank you. And as we said, Jennifer, before we started the show, this needs to happen more often, to have you come back, because so much is going on, and it really does matter to have our folks here be informed about what's going on at the city. So thank you, Sandpoint Mayor Shelby Ronstadt and City of Sandpoint Administrator Jennifer Stapleton for coming in today. And we'll have you back in 4 to 6 weeks, would you say, Chris?
Something like that.
Yeah, you always say that.
Yeah. But here's the thing.
And months go by.
Yeah. But here's the thing. We want you to come back. So Jennifer or Shelby, anytime, Mayor Ronstadt, anytime that you want to, let us know a couple weeks ahead of time.
Yeah, it might be a good opportunity is hopefully with approval at the design competition moving forward to kind of talk that through as we're going through that process.
A show just devoted to that whole idea. And what happens with the results of the thing? That'd be my next question. We're out of time for that.
Yeah, we really are. We have 1 minute left. We want to let our listeners know that if you didn't hear this, all of this interview today, you can go to our website, krfy.org, and we have a podcast pull down menu, and this interview will be on that later today. So it's such good information. You both did great, and thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks Susie and Chris, and thanks to all your listeners out there.